南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。
Karma is the energy of life. Myoho Renge Kyo is the engine of mind, Buddha mind, clearly perceiving the engine of life. What is karma? It is energy informations, kinetics, momentum, attraction, repulsion. Everything perceived by the human mind apparatus, including the apparatus, is itself fundamentally built on energy in various forms. Karma. So, is karma good or bad? Karma is life. Karma is energy at work. The judging of it is the incessant, persistent action, thought, word, deed of the mind of discriminations, the samsaric mind of identification. And Myoho Renge Kyo is the mind that perceives, experiences that whole process, personally, universally, universally, providing unattached experience, right? Trying to think of other analogies. Personally, I think I've talked this one to death. It comes up so often in these videos that I put up, either within the context of other sutras, other ideas, analogies. Certainly in the last video, I tried to once again do a deep dive into karma. There are many, many videos on this channel that you could search in the channel in that little search bar. Just put karma in there and see how many videos come up. And I approach this challenge from many different aspects, but as we're in the Lankavatara, this very dissecting of this thing we call mind, it's another opportunity to define karma. Or as Shakyamuni calls it, habit energy. That translation has a lot of meaning, doesn't it? So I'm going to go back to the Sagathakam. Kind of a review of every portion of the Lankavatara. I'm just going to hit some highlights here. And See if we don't detect the pattern. At that time, Mahamati, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, said to Tathagata, to Shakyamuni, and we have the verse 1, verse 2. First of all, let's read the introduction here. Listen to the wonderful Mahayana doctrine declared in the Lankavatara Sutra, composed into verse gems, and destroying a net of philosophical views. And I think by now you can see that philosophical views is an address to his students, that there are in India many, 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 my nose is running, apologies. Thinkers, Hindu thinkers, Brahmin thinkers, thinkers of every sort. Whether you call them gurus or just the, I forget the word now. I had an Indian friend who told me there's these gentlemen who would sit on stumps or rocks at the borders of towns or center of town. But usually a place of solace, so edge of town, who would let their ear hair grow long and sit and act. And you can see where the legend comes from. These people still today sit on the edges of small towns as the wise ones, the ones to take questions to. And they would speak their minds on analysis per their wisdom. What in other cultures has been called a shaman or oracle, or we have all kinds of names for these people who are intellectuals of the human experience. And there is a lot to learn from people like that, not least of which is observational skills. And I think that it's very clear from reading the Lankavatara Sutra that Shakyamuni is talking about these people, even within Buddhism, who speak as though their words and their insights will have all the answers that anyone could require, request. And that this is very important to Shakyamuni to identify how ultimately they are based in samsara, and that their commentary, their answers, quote-unquote, are provisional to the samsaric experience. They may be helpful in some ways, but ultimately the shaman, the oracle, the wisdom you seek is in your own experience. Only you can see through your own samsaric reality. Only you can single-mindedly meet the Buddha mind, your Buddha mind. Only you, in your samsaric conditions, unique or non-unique as they may be, are individual enough that ultimately all of those little things that make up the idea you have of you, that ego, that self, can only be disassembled by the very thing that assembled it, your mind. So listen carefully. composed into verse gems, right? Again, this is something to memorize. In English, it doesn't verse so well, but in the original Prakrit, it's a very iambic pentameter, chanting. It's always been chanting. And destroying a net of the philosophical views. A net, interesting analogy, like walking into a spider web. The philosophical endeavor tries to capture every grain of samsaric experience, human experience. So there's an answer for everything, but it's not really an answer. It's just more of the same. It's packaging. These individual objects are not solid. They're not materiality. Remember, we talked about that earlier in a previous sutra. Materiality is the illusion. It is the experience of samsara. It is a failure to see that materiality is an emergent property of energy, that everything is constantly roiling. It doesn't mean that today something is this and tomorrow it will be a little less this and a little more that. No, this is happening moment to moment in fractions of instants of, it's just constant. They rise because of imagination, as the imagination itself is empty. What is imagined is empty. This is something Nagarjuna dove into, tried to explain. If you can picture another thought exercise, that the chair you're sitting on, really picture the grain of the wood. Let's say it's a wood chair. Do you know the grain of the wood has hard parts and soft parts? That it's a certain type of wood. It's more or less dense. That there's glue and screws holding that wood together. Yeah. Start there. And then dive in like the cartoon camera in Horton Hears a Who. And dive in to those fibers of the wood. And see that even though it looks like a solid object, there's room between those fibers. There's some are tightly packed, some are loosely packed. That's why there are hard or loose fibers or soft fibers. It's not because the fibers are that different. It's just that they're put together differently. Some have a little more space between them. And then get into that space and start looking at those fibers under a microscope and see that they too are built of material and space. Go all the way down to the molecule and look at these atoms attached to one another to make a molecule of wood or sap or whatever is in there. And then remember the analogy of the distance of particles in an atom. I mean, we're talking about an atom with its pinpoint-sized particles being a distance of the entire breadth of the country apart. It's like looking in the skies at night and instead of seeing all little points of light, whether they're stars, planets, whatever, and instead seeing that it's just a sheet of light, kind of like during the day. Maybe it's a sheet of blue sky. It's colored light. Looks solid, just like the wood chair. But then as the sun goes around the other side of the planet, that solidity disappears. It's gone. What happened to it? Did the blue cease to exist? Did the light that created it cease to exist? It's still there. It's just hidden by your planet. But now we see right through it. It's the same air. And we see these little dots of hard stuff, we think. And even most of those hard things are no longer hard things. They're light that's still moving toward us. They've long been extinct. Not all of them, no. Start to take apart solidity and realize that the chair you're sitting on is 90% nothing. It's not solid. And even if you go all the way down to energy itself, quiescent, you won't fall to the floor. Because the karma, the energy at work in its various formations, continues to be there, holding up your butt. But all of it is a construction. It's a construction born of the engine of life, the engine of reality, the engine, its energy. And if we see it thus, we can still utilize the wood to make the chair to support our butts. But we understand its ephemeral quality, and we don't invest our identity into this is my chair, the chair that I made, the chair that I purchased, the chair that I borrowed, sit on, the chair in the world. It's just utilizing this samsaric energies, unattached. See, we don't annihilate it. We don't say, well, you're not real. The battle of reality or non-reality is a perception of mind. And the moment your perception owns is the moment that you're no longer in your Buddha mind. You're in your mind of attachment. And sometimes it's fun to be there, right? You're bouncing your grandchild on your knee. Or you're playing in the sand. Or on and on and on and on. That's samsara. But it's a very, very... It's not even... I won't even call it a slippery slope. It's a precipitous cliff. You're either... Pew, like Wile E. Coyote in samsara. Or... you're observing samsara. You're not trying to annihilate it. You're in it and of it, but your perception is freed from it, liberated from it. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Let me exist without tumultuous emotions and difficult attachments and negotiations and positioning and avarice, need, want, get out of my way. Let me have it. Oh, you could do this for a mere this, anger. I don't know. I don't want to know. I'm winning. I'm losing. Foolishness. Greed, anger, stupidity. Avarice, anger, foolishness. All of it is about the way we treat the samsaric experience as though it were the real thing. It's just the momentary alliance of play, roiling energies. Let it be that. By wrong discrimination, the Vijnana rises severally, as eightfold, as ninefold, like waves on the great ocean. Do you perceive the great body of water, or do you only focus on the tumult of the surface? See, waves, if you're in a little boat on the ocean, believe me, waves are your focus. It is violent. It is off-putting. It is decentralizing. It is all of the things that disturb your being. But as a great bird in the sky looking down upon all those waves, what you see is the immensity of the body of water. And the waves, they're incidental. Their coloration, that massive body of water, and then becomes an opportunity to dive into it and get some food. To the fish, the waves are a non sequitur. Swimming to a human is an important negotiation of breathing and activity to stay afloat on the water. Be a fish for a moment. What ridiculousness, those humans. Just breathe in the water to get your oxygen and swimming? What is that? Let me just go over here. See, everything is a... I keep hearing this word. There's all these robot voices translating text into language now on YouTube. And some of them are horrible. And some of them are quite good. But you can always catch them. There was this male voice narrating something on a YouTube video. And suddenly he said something about technology and a paradigm shift. It reminded me of childhood, the first time I saw that word in print. A paradigm. What's a paradigm? English is a weird language. Anyway, a paradigm, right? Paradigm shift. The root is constantly nourished by habit energy, firmly attached to the seat. What is habit energy? Karma. Just energy, information. Not formed, information. Energy is never just sitting there. It's constantly at work. It's karma. That's the engine of life. To see everything as such is enlightenment, awakening. Because if you see it as such, as energy, then everything has homogeneity. There is no emotional attachment to other, because other is the primary illusion. That doesn't deny that there is other. It simply puts it in its proper place. The mind moves along with an objective world as iron is drawn by the lodestone. Do you get that? Samsara moves along. We don't annihilate it. It comes together like iron to a magnet. What's the magnet? Karma. Formation. So every time you hear or read dialogue from a sutra that says ceasing the formations, we're not talking about killing it off. We're talking about ceasing the attachment to the formations, the reality that we assign to the formations, as though we now have earned something, owned something, we possess it, we identify with it. There is the root of our suffering. It's a very simple formula, but you've got to get your understanding right around these words, because the words themselves, they're just pointing to enlightenment. They are not enlightenment. They're just tools for adjusting paradigms, right? The original source on which all sentient beings are dependent is beyond theorization. Philosophers, thinkers, brainers, all doings, formations, energies at work, cease and emancipation obtains. Exactly what I've been saying. If you cease your attachment to the product of these energies at work, and see how they're all homogeneously created in the first place, then there is no avarice to have. There is no manipulation to get. It's all about ownership and subsisting this magnificent construction, ego, self. Knowing and known are transcended. Knowing and known are transcended. Knowing being your wonderful perceptive skills of identification, and known the things we establish as identified discriminating things, including self and other, they're transcended. We get underneath them, around them, above them. They now no longer have a hold, a stranglehold on our existence. Our existence, therefore, is liberated from those created, constructed realities, thingifying. In the samadhi known as Maya-like, one goes beyond the 10 stages of bodhisattvaship. One who is removed from thought and knowledge perceives the mind king. What is the mind king? Buddha, the Buddha mind. The mind that contains the pervasive energy quiescently, not in formation, but that is there all along, from which all these formations instantiate the thing we call mind. Word salad. But how do you point at the one perceptive truth, the one perceptive apparatus, without, through words that are by their very nature created things? So to say we attain a Buddha mind is kind of an oxymoron, isn't it? There is, though, through our samsaric mind, the ability to transcend the knowable and the known and knowledge, transcend mind to Buddhahood, being Buddha, with the Buddha eye and the Buddha ear, right? The Buddha statues, they always have the third eye. That's just the power of seeing at reality as it is. The longer ears, the longer, all these features that we put into a sculpture or a drawing to indicate these teachings, and all we've done is thingified Buddha. This is why Buddha was very adamant about don't create paintings and statues of me to worship, because worshiping is samsara. It's the home of the philosophers, the thinkers, the this, not that people. That's just more of the same. This is why they can offer you nothing. Just as I, Shakyamuni, Buddha, cannot offer you anything other than a path to liberate yourself. Because only you can Buddha your way out of this. And when you see, when that crystallizes, your understanding, your transcendence of thingifying, then and only then can you truly enjoy and have compassion for thingification as it goes on all around you. See it for what it truly is. Samsara. It's what the whole game is. But again, words. Except for discrimination, there is neither samskrita, things made, nor asamskrita, things not made. The ignorant hold on to them as a barren woman does to a child of her dream. What fools they are. That's a pretty visceral example trying to make this point. That our human state, our attached human identifying self and other mind, is compared here to a woman who cannot conceive. In fact, I'll go further. It's like the man who dreams of bearing a child. Right? How foolish is that? I know you can go into science fiction and blah, 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 blah. But trust me, just stay simple on this. A man, a male human, is not designed to bear a child. Let's just agree on that. No matter what could, what, I don't even want to get into it. Just stay straight with me for a minute, and I don't mean sexual orientation. My God, we live in a world today of such politic about identity. Oh my God, we're not satisfied with the tremendous amount of overtaking energy we put into selfhood. And now we're arguing about the varieties of selfhood we can invent. Holy crap, we're humans. Can we just deal with that? It's getting insane. Truly insane. And I think from a place of enlightenment, I can't imagine the patience, the compassion required for someone like Shakyamuni, who's attained Buddhahood and walks and courses in samsara, in his Buddha-ness, the unknowable amount of patience he would have to have watching this, the ignorant, the tremendous attachment and unwillingness to let it go, and the amount of energy put into making it so, making it the suffering that it is. Stop. To me, teaching is an expedient. This is Shakyamuni's words, right? Well, a translation of them, but certainly you get the meaning. To me, teaching is an expedient. But I do not teach external signs. Learn how to avoid that. Learn how to avoid this. He's not talking about stuff. The ignorant, because of their attachment to existence, seize on signified and signifying. So they take the words that I speak, the teachings that I offer, the expedient means by which I try to indicate something much more profound. Many students, especially the ignorant ones, because they don't have a clue what I'm talking about, just seize on every single word and example that I speak as though in those words are those words themselves are the answer. They holify stuff because they're so into the human condition of thingifying, then they make certain things like relics or books or statues, they reify those things. They turn them into deities. They constantly push the power they have outside of their selves because they've insulated themselves as a self, an ego, and can't perceive of the immense power of insight that they themselves, their minds have. A knower of all things is not an all-knower, and all is not within all. The ignorant discriminate and think, I am the enlightened one in the world. Do you see in that statement how that's very contradictory? I am the enlightened one in the world. You're homogeneous with the world. The world is you. Get enlightened to that. But I am not enlightened, nor do I enlighten others. I'm just coursing in Buddha. I over and over and over again, he's trying to find word constructions to turn on the light bulb, right? And here goes to something else I keep saying. The things are empty. These things are empty without a self nature and unborn, like Maya, like a dream. And their being and non-being is unobtainable. This is what I say when samsara is this thingified view of energy. We don't get rid of that thingified view. We just stop identifying the thingified view. Because we too are that energy and that amalgam of energies at work. Karma is life. So we don't annihilate it. And we don't instantiate it. We simply observe it. Look at this. Unaffected. All right. Yeah, I could go on and on and on and on. It's just, it's the same thing over and over and over. And it's in the Lotus Sutra. We're not talking about the Lotus Sutra right now, so. Not to be attached to anything existent, truly knowing what the truth of solitude is to walk all alone. The fruit of Pratyekabuddha, which is above speculation, is what I teach. And he's making a larger point here. But you hear, every time you hear these words now, I want you to think thought energy, speech energy, walking energy, being energy, everything being energy. Energy is you, me, chair, world, planets. We're just flavors. Does chocolate hate vanilla? Flavors don't care, they just are. Let them be. You don't own them. You're not having to make them or get rid of them. They're just there. Wow, look at flavors. Sometimes I think if you took little chunks of this of these videos, please don't. I know I'm putting it out there. It could sound like I belong in a rubber room. These words, they're very they're obstacles of a sort, but they're also pointing to something deeper, some truth about the engine of enlightenment, right? Myoho Renge Kyo. Oh, now I get it. Now I'm released. Now I enjoy. Rather than, which way do I duck? It's all amazing. All good. If you have to do that, right? Okay. Thanks for listening. You guys are amazing. I know you're getting this. You're getting all sorts of little insights. And if you pop up with questions, please share them with me. Put them in the comments. Email me personally. We'll talk about it. You'll give me points of view that perhaps I haven't considered, which would be amazing. I love that. I count on that. We have one more day of the Lankavatara, and then Sunday we do a Gongyo, and we move on to the next one. Not sure what that'll be. I have one on deck, but there's plenty of time to change that. Especially if you have a strong suggestion. I want to hear it. Until then, please, please take care of your health. I know it's a samsaric thing, but we need it in order to experience Buddha. So let's make it work for us instead of the other way around. Be kind to yourself, please. Be kind to others. It just works better that way. Thanks, patrons. Thanks for your donations. Thanks for your support. Thanks for watching. Like, subscribe, share, blah, 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 blah. And I'll see you in the next one. Take good care. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Maybe I'll sign off that way from now on. Bye.